It used to be, a long time ago, that you went to a museum and you looked at things hanging on walls or objects standing on pedestals. These days, not so much. You're just as likely to run into a performance as you are into a painting on the wall. The Tino Segal Show at the Guggenheim removed all the objects from the museum so that all there is to do is talk to the people in the space. With the Whitney Biennial just around the corner and its own cluster of performance art planned, we thought we'd take a look at just how performance got into museums to begin with and whether that's a good idea. I'm Carolina Miranda, and I'm here at WNYC with the Whitney Biennial co-curator, Gary Carrion Murayari, and with Vallejo Gantner, artistic director of the East Village Performance Space, PS122. So, Gary, let's start with you. The 2008 Biennial, we had 3 weeks of performances at the Armory. I actually participated in one of them. I got to be a psychotherapy patient by Burt Rodriguez. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I feel much better now. We are looking at a reduced biennial this year. So what's on the slate performance-wise?
Part of what we wanted to do in having fewer artists and also not having that offsite venue is concentrate everything more. Mm-hmm. So the sculpture court is being designed by an artist from Chicago, Theaster Gates. He's built this kind of an architectural installation, temple, shack-like structure. And sort of later in the show, different artists and these musicians that he works with will be doing residencies there. So
audiences will be able to enter this shack and be a part of
More
what
sort
happens?
Of in the larger courtyard. He calls these musicians, they're the Black Monks of Mississippi. So their music draws on blues and also sort of monastic chanting and things like that. So they'll be playing in the shack, and then people will be able to walk around and kind of interact with them.
You mentioned one artist earlier in our conversation that stages her performances in the galleries.
Yeah, this is Aki Sasamoto, who works in performance and also sculpture. She's created a new installation on the fourth floor of the museum, a very, you know, sort of bizarre sculptural environment, but I think probably 10 or 15 times during the run of the show, she'll be there in the galleries performing in front of viewers.
What exactly does she do? I mean,
she kind of tells, basically she's a storyteller, and she tells narratives that draw on sort of personal memory, you know, and then other sort of fields like math and science and these kind of surreal narratives around everyday objects. She was trained as a dancer, too, so it's a lot about movement and the way that she relates with these objects in the space.
Now, I mean, you've spent 2 years on the road looking at art. Like, how did you come across her work?
I was kind of aware of her, but, you know, you never really know what she's going to do. So when we got there, I don't know if she knew what the studio visit was supposed to be like. So we got in there and she just jumped right into a performance. And we didn't actually know it was a performance. She just basically climbed into this wardrobe, this sort of large wooden wardrobe. And we weren't exactly sure what she was doing. But then all of a sudden you saw her face appear on a little monitor and she was telling this really strange story from the inside of the wardrobe. And then she kind of climbed out of the drawers and put on these sort of shoes with sort of knives on the end of them and was kind of chopping bread and potatoes and things with her feet. And it was just the strangest thing. We were just completely flabbergasted and completely inspired. It was really, really wonderful.
All right, Vallejo, as a director of a dedicated performance space of PS122, is there something a little weird sometimes? And I mean, this was something, a conversation we had with Francesco Bonami, where we talked about the rationale for putting like all the video in the biennial on one floor because it's a specific type of experience. And to go from like looking at a physical object to a performance is somewhat weird. And
I mean, there's things that drive me crazy when you walk into certain spaces. I think there's a sense of like, oh, it's live, so we can kind of, it can be crap, you know, or it can be sort of ill thought out in terms of the audience relationship to the work and the audience kind of engagement with the work.
You've also said that many artists don't really know how to stage a performance, that they don't know how to direct an audience's gaze. Like, what do you mean by that?
I think that you've got to be incredibly thoughtful about how you focus an audience's gaze, about how you get them to watch and how you get them to look. And I think too little performance in gallery contexts actually does that well.
Well, Gary, let's address that, because I mean, sometimes I do go see performances in museums and in galleries where I feel it's more about the performers than about me, the viewer, the participant. I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think that definitely can be the case. I mean, when it is just sort of an arbitrary decision to have a performance, you know, in a gallery space just because you can, or, you know, it's something that the artist is interested in. With somebody like Aki, it's a little bit different because she's also a sculptor and it's about this, you know, this environment that she's created. And when you go in that space, whether she's there or not, you're in a particularly you know, three-dimensional physical space that you're meant to move around and be a part of. I think the Whitney has this problem sometimes with some of the performances that we do, and people don't necessarily know how to read them when it's just something that's happening there. And I think that that also applies to the film and video work in the biennial too. I mean, and that's part of the, you know, the justification for doing this sort of film and video floor. Not that necessarily everybody's going to go in and watch everything start to finish, but there is that tendency when it is kind of, you know, just arbitrarily integrated into a large show that you just kind of glance at it the same way you would glance at a painting. And that's what we're hoping to get away from with this.
And now I had a question for you, Vallejo, which in our prior conversations with you, you had said that the art world had managed, you know, to sort of make itself into the new cool. In quotations, and that
another
the
word
performance
that should not
and
that, should be avoided. There.
That well, you said it. I'm just quoting you. So you know, is that true? I mean, isn't?
Yeah, I think speaking, I guess, with my hat on as a sort of from the performing arts, we've got massive envy at the moment of galleries. You
really?
Know? Totally.
You have performance envy?
Complete performance anxiety. because there has been an incredibly successful sort of cultural feeling of like, yeah, the visual arts had kind of attained a sort of level of financial profitability. And we watched kind of PS1's ability to throw Warm Up or Guggenheim's First Fridays, which are these incredibly, you know, hipster kind of parties. And we're like, where the hell are our audiences? You know, as you watch 15, 20 people sometimes trickle into your theater and you're tearing your hair out. So I think the fact that galleries have so successfully co-opted kind of performance into their everyday bread and butter. Maybe that's a slight exaggeration, but is like an indication that we need to get our act together.
But I think, you know, even though it's sort of more prevalent in galleries and museums right now, I don't think that they're at the point where they are, you know, the place where you go to see the most interesting and experimental and kind of vital performances. It tends towards the spectacular, and it's not necessarily a place for developing extremely fresh feeling performance. I mean, it ends up coming. Yeah, it's not a site for experimentation, which, you know, I think both for performance and for, let's say, experimental film and video, you know, it's really more sort of an anointing that takes place. So the more opportunity there is for people to come out and to go to these other venues and see things, that's where the heart and the meat and the richness of these different mediums really takes place. And I think that's always going to be the case, hopefully.
I think performance and performance art can be a little bit befuddling, especially the avant-garde stuff, to folks who aren't familiar with art. So sell me on it.
Why is it any more befuddling than an abstract painting or a piece of video?
I think people can wrap their brains around a painting being art because that's kind of what they've been trained to think for centuries. The video is probably more questionable.
I think the selling of it is that understanding or not understanding it is sort of the wrong question. I think the thing is to think about what your experience of it was. And good work is experiential, and good work is something that we lose ourselves in, for whether intellectually or emotionally or physically. And it changes you. And I think the worry about it is not to worry about, like, did I understand what that really meant? You know, I mean, for me, often the best stuff is things that send my brain into thinking about really interesting things elsewhere. Has nothing to do with rational understanding or looking for narrative or looking for a well-rounded character. Sometimes it's impossible, and sometimes it's incredibly boring and bad. And that's part of the kind of experimenting process, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're going to be completely confused by Aki's performance on a first view, and that's part of the beauty of it. And I think some are more accessible than others, but in that challenge, there's more to be gained, I think, than, you know, I think people look at paintings for 4 seconds and think they get them, but they didn't really, you know, they didn't really have that kind of in-depth experience, that experience of duration. And hopefully, you know, that's what we're hoping for, is people will just take the time and see and kind of be surprised and challenged. So.
All right. Thank you so much for coming today. I really appreciate it. Okay, podcast listeners, your turn. Visit the culture page at wnyc.org and weigh in. What makes for a good performance, and is a museum the right place to see it?